ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Bhagavad-gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of ISKCON, Chapter 9, The Most Confidential Knowledge, Text 24.
Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhu eva cha natumam abhijananti tatvenatas chavantite.
Translation, Lord Krishna says, I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental form fall down. Here Lord Krishna is making a point which he makes throughout Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita means that which is spoken or more specifically sung by the supreme all-opulent person who is, as mentioned in this verse, the supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices. And as stated throughout the Bhagavad Gita, He is supreme. There is no truth superior to Him. Everything rests upon Him as pearls are strung on a thread. Throughout the Gita, Krishna is establishing. Here, aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhureva cha. I am the enjoyer, Krishna says. I am the master. Mataparatram nanyat kincedasti dhananjaya. There is no object or person that is greater than me or equal to me. This is the position of God. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam prabhatate. Everything emanates from me. Therefore, ultimately, Krishna says, manmana, think of me, bhava madbhakta, become my devotee, sarvadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Giving up all varieties of religion, pseudo-religion, concocted religion, materialistic religion, whatever's going on in the name of religion. This one Bengali poet has said that Priti vite jato kichu dharma nama chale bhagavata kahe taha paripurna chale. That whatever is going on in the name of religion in this world, it's all just some cheating, fabrication, that's all. So this, Krishna says, give it up and come to this point of religion, surrender to me only. So Bhagavad Gita is only 700 verses and a lot is in there, but this basic point is being pushed home. Krishna is hammering in the head of the initially reluctant Arjuna. Of course, Arjuna is pure devotee of Krishna, eternally liberated soul. Therefore, he can understand Bhagavad Gita, just hearing it once. And big so-called scholars, they write big theses on Bhagavad Gita and don't understand a word of it, even after getting PhDs in religious studies and no idea what Bhagavad Gita is all about. So Arjuna, he very quickly understood because he is a pure devotee of Krishna. So he very quickly accepted the point. Krishna is making this point again and again and again for dull heads like us, who find it very difficult to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we are His eternal servant, because from time immemorial we are thinking I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everyone else is my servant. And there's something wrong with the world because people don't recognize it. I'm so great, I'm so wonderful. Whichever species of life we're in, we're all trying to show how wonderful and great we are. The dogs, they have in Russia, they call that a dog's wedding. That means when all the dogs get together and bark on the street. I think here in London, if you do that, the police will come and take them to Battersea Dogs Home or something. But if you've been to India, you know they do this. The dogs have a party at night, in Russia too. They all come and see who can bark the loudest. So what is this barking? Simply saying, I am the top dog. I am the best. So in every species of life, I don't know exactly, but you'll see, even the cockroaches, they're running around at night. The rats, in all their society, they're all trying to show, I am the supreme, I am the best. And in human society too, what is this whole London? It's just a big rat race, as they say. And they're not talking about the rats in the sewers, they're talking about the rats above the sewers. They're all racing around, running here and there, trying to show who is the best. But you're not the best. You may have £25,000 car and a house in the city, a very nice apartment, and a country home to go to, and you may fly to Spain, hoping to get away from the rain over a long weekend, and you may be very puffed up in this way, but you're not supreme. You're under the laws of material nature. Krishna is supreme. He is always supreme, and neither by imagination or by getting a lot of money or by getting a big university degree can we ever become supreme. nor by declaring it. This is another useless trick of the impersonalists. They say, I am God. I am supreme. I am also Brahmasmi Aham. I am spiritual. I am all spirit. You can say that. You may think, well, Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, I am supreme. So I can also say, Krishna says, I am supreme. So here I am, Joe Patel, or whatever my name may be. And I can also say, I'm supreme. You can say. And you might even get some fools following you, because a report came in the magazine about 1.5 years ago in India that there are at present about 320 incarnations of God current in India. So you can always get some foolish people to follow you. And that's, I guess, the most prominent, because most people in India are wandering around the street with two thoughts on their head. One is where to get some chapatis, and the other is, I am God. So everyone's thinking they're God, but some of them are more successful at pretending to be God, and I've seen some bogus incarnation, some huge fat guy. He didn't have any chapati problem. He was being carried in a palanquin. He was being carried in a palanquin, sitting like this. So puffed up, it was like you could almost cut the pride. It was so thick. And he had all these village people carrying him. Obviously, these people were completely uneducated. And he was so proud because all these village people were jumping around saying, Jai Guru Dev, Jai Guru Dev. And what's his credit? He's got 20 village people who have not much more brains than the dogs and pigs in their village. And they're jumping around saying, Jai Guru Dev, Jai Bhagavan, Jai. And he's thinking, yes, I'm God, because these idiotic people are worshipping me. So Krishna is not such a God, dreamed up. He's actually God. And that is recognized by Asita, Devala, Vyas, all great authorities, Arjuna, Narada, in the modern age, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Vallabhacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada, all great acharyas. Jesus Christ, he also accepted Krishna is the Supreme Lord. They all accept, not just some foolish people, but even Shankaracharya, who was the father of impersonalism in the modern age, he also accepted Krishna as Supreme. And Krishna also showed that he is Supreme. He didn't just say, I'm Supreme. Recently in Baroda, some young lady came bursting into my room, all excited, telling me that my guru is an incarnation of Lord Shiva. So I thought, well, what's the proof? Well, you should go and see him, then you'll realize. How can you say he's not God unless you go and see him and realize? This is supposed to be some kind of evidence. But Krishna, factually, in front of so many people, he showed, lifting up Govardhan Hill for 7 days as a young boy. He's not a young boy, he's always God. Even when he was on the lap of his mother, he showed, she said, open your mouth, you're eating dirt. And she looked inside and she saw the whole universe with herself also. So many ways he showed. From the very beginning, Putana, such a great demon, that the demigods, they were afraid of her. So many big demons came. The demigods, they were all, that time, so many big demons were born on the earth planet that even the demigods were afraid of. And Krishna, one by one, just for sport, so that after, he used to kill them all, so that after some time, his friends became so confident that they thought, whenever they saw it, the ferocious demon, they were not at all afraid. This Aghasura came, took the form of a big python, and they thought, oh, this is a big demon come to kill us. That's fun. And they all walked into his mouth, and they thought, it's all right, Krishna's here, he'll save us, no problem. They were so confident, because Krishna was doing daily, lifting up the Govardhan Hill. That I always say, that we don't mind these people calling themselves incarnations of God, but just they should just prove it by holding one hill for 7 days, that's all. We'll supply a hill. We'll lower it, if you like, if you're too weak to lift it up, because after all it's Kali Yuga and you may have decreased in strength, then we'll arrange for one big rock to be lowered onto your head, and all you have to do is hold it for 7 days. And if you don't, well, you'll be crushed to death, and we'll know you're not God. So this is a good system for removing the world. But of course they'll say, no, you have to realize it. You're not very advanced, therefore you can't realize it. But Krishna didn't say that. He showed his universal form also. Not only to Arjuna, but so many people were present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. They also saw. Even before that, the Dhritarashtra, who was blind from birth, he also saw Krishna's universal form. And Duryodhana also saw, but because he was a demon, he thought, oh, Krishna's just doing some magic, that's all. Krishna showed before the battle of Kurukshetra, look, I'm God, there's no way you're going to win because I support the Pandavas. So better, I'm coming, I'm telling you for your benefit, give them at least some villages, let them rule over. That will be good for you. You won't have to fight, because if you fight, you're going to lose, because I'm supporting them, and I'm God. You don't believe I'm God? Okay, he showed universal form. And Duryodhana thought, oh, Krishna's showing some hallucinatory magic, that's all. He wouldn't accept, even with so much evidence. Even learned, Bhishma, Vidura, even his father, Dhritarashtra, they all accepted Krishna is God, but so puffed up. No, I am God. This is the demoniac mentality, that I shall be the enjoyer, I shall be the master. But here Krishna is saying, no, you are not. I am the enjoyer, I am the master, you are the servant. Very bitter medicine. Very bitter for the puffed up materialist to accept. That someone is superior to me, how can it be possible? Me, I'm so great. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the cornerstone of his teaching is, what? Who can say? Kunadapi sunichena tararapi sahishnuna amanina manadina kirtaniya sadari harihi. One should be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, ready to offer all respects to others, not expecting respect for himself. In such an attitude, one can chant the holy name of Lord Krishna constantly. So, when we are faced with such a proposition, we think, this is very difficult. How can I attain such a stage of humility? Actually, this humility is natural, and it is realistic. It is realistic because we are not at all significant. It's only this illusion of ahankar, false ego, that we've been carrying for so many lifetimes, that we think, I am very important. But our actual position, if we consider, what is our position? What is our position in this universe? This universe, such a vast universe, and this is only one universe in unlimited universes, and we're somewhere in the universe on one insignificant little planet, and we're in some little insignificant little country, in some the capital city of one country, and of so many countries, and we're sitting in a hall in Harrow thinking, I'm very great, I'm wonderful. Everyone is thinking. Everyone is saying, I'm so important. But we're not. Even if we just take from an objective point of view, let us examine, what is our position? What is our importance? We're not important. Therefore, to be humble, that should be our natural position. But because of this illusion which we have accepted, that I am very great, we're thinking that we are very great. What a great illusion to think that we are great. What a great illusion that we're so much insignificant. Even the great leaders of the world, our Yeltsins and our Clintons and our, I guess, John Major's somewhere among the, not exactly a great leader, but head of a small country. So, what is their position? In a few days, they'll be gone and forgotten, and they'll write their autobiography and make a lot of money, and then they'll die, and I guess their name will be inscribed in the House of Commons, ex-Prime Minister, and in the course of time it will all be forgotten. And John Major now, or Bill Clinton now, a few years they'll be dead, and then there'll be a dog or a cat or something like that. Usually, politicians get such a position because animalistic propensity to lord it over others. They actually think they're very great. Big illusion. So even the big leaders of the world, their position is not very significant. If we think, how significant is Bill Clinton in relationship with Indra, or Chandra, or Surya? They have charge, or they're supposed to be in charge, of a small country on a small planet for a short period of time. And Chandra, Surya, Indra, they're in charge of a heavenly planet for hundreds and thousands of years, with far greater opulence and power. But even they are insignificant in relation, totally insignificant in relationship with Krishna. We see in the Bhagavatam, Indra and Brahma, sometimes they thought, who is this Krishna? I'm here in the heavenly planets, and there's Krishna, and he's just a cowherd boy, and people are thinking he's God. And he's just running around in the forest, chasing some cows. How can he be God? So both Indra and Brahma, they wanted to test Krishna. But they both found That Krishna is, he may appear to be like an insignificant cowherd boy, but he's far, far greater than that. Even Indra, he practically, what he was doing was almost demoniac. He wanted to destroy Vrindavan and the residents of Vrindavan with Krishna. And Krishna was thinking, he wants to destroy all my Rajavasis. I'll destroy him. But then he thought, well, actually Indra is so insignificant. Why should I get so angry with him? So he just held up Govardhan Hill. Why should I get angry? It's Indra. What is this?
He thought. Can I just pick up for 1 minute, Maharaj? There's a car which is blocking J355 and N707. It's your car.
Dhamma also. You can imagine it must be quite easy to be puffed up if you're Brahma. Of course, he's a great devotee, so his intelligence is very clear, but just to show, for the sake of Leela, just like Arjuna became bewildered, he became bewildered and thought, this Krishna, a cowherd boy, maybe he's God? I don't really think so, because he knew, I'm born from Narayana. He knew that Krishna is Narayana, but Narayana, vast form. Brahma was born from the lotus, which comes from the navel of Lord Vishnu. So he knew that vast form, full of majesty, opulence and power. And he thought, and this Krishna, what's... He's not my father. I don't think he's God. Anyway, let's test him and see. And then he found out that certainly he is God, because Krishna showed that Brahma, you have a little mystic potency, but your mystic potency compared to mine, Krishna showed, is just like a firefly trying to compete with the sun. And Brahma realized that. And he offered all these prayers to Krishna, and Krishna was standing there thinking, what is this Brahma doing here? I'm just playing with my friends, and why is he disturbing? And Brahma offered all these prayers, and then Krishna just stood there. He didn't say anything, and Brahma didn't know. Is Krishna angry with me, or is he pleased with me? Or he didn't know, so he just went back to Brahma Loka, and Krishna said, all right, he's gone now, and he went on playing with his friends. So that's Krishna. How great that he doesn't even care for all the trappings of the I'm the big king, I'm the big enjoyer. He prefers to be a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. Therefore, very difficult to understand Krishna. Because even though he's so great, he takes, apparently he takes a role like a very ordinary person. So very difficult to understand Krishna. Even to understand how great is Krishna, it's not possible to fully understand. Even Anantadev, who is another form of Krishna, that means he has unlimited potency, because he's an incarnation of God. He's a expanded partial of God. So he's also God, and with all his power, he's trying to describe Krishna's opulence and majesty. But he doesn't come to an end. Even though he has thousands of mouths, and with all these mouths, since time immemorial, he's been describing all the qualities of Krishna, but he doesn't come to an end. Even with God's own power, God's greatness is greater than his own power to describe it. So how great he is, that is the subject matter of great sages, transcendental poets. They've been describing the glories of Krishna since time immemorial. And here we are thinking, well, Krishna, I don't think he's saying, actually I'm God. Everyone should bow down before me. This is our disease. We don't like to bow down before Krishna. We don't like, we think, I'm quite intelligent, and I don't think I should bow down before anybody. There's our disease. That Prabhupada, there was one lecture in 1968 in Seattle. So one man was visiting, and he said, at the end of the lecture, there was questions and answers. So he saw all the devotees bowing down. So in the Western countries, this is considered something very, very bad. Slave mentality. Why should we bow? Everyone is equal. Democracy. We have all kinds of rights. Citizens' rights, voters' rights, miners' rights, trade union rights, women's rights, children's rights, animal rights. Everyone has got their rights. Everyone is right. I mean, my right. My huck. That's my... I'll do. I'll say I'm as good as you in every way. I shouldn't bow down before anyone. But this is just the opposite of the proper mentality, which is that actually to understand I'm very small, God is very great, therefore I should bow down. But we don't like this In America, they have the idea of the rugged individual, just like this Marlborough advert. You see, this guy who died of lung cancer eventually. You know that? The guy from the Marlborough advert, he got lung cancer. Right? And they're still showing the photo of him sitting on his horse. And now he's become a horse, probably. Anyway, this is the epitome of the idea, the rugged individual who stands up. He doesn't kowtow to anybody. He doesn't, great guru of all managers in the modern age, this Stephen, what's his name? Stephen Covey? How do you pronounce that? Anyway, I was looking in his book, and he was giving his idea of the ideal person. So one of the things is, he reads all different kinds of magazines, and he's up, and he's very liberal and intellectual, and one of his qualities, he doesn't become anybody's disciple. That's supposed to be the quality of a great person. But actually, greatness begins with bowing down. Greatness begins with understanding that I'm very insignificant. I'm simply the servant of 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 Krishna. So this man, he was saying to Prabhupada, I see all your people here, they're bowing down. I don't like to do that. I don't see why I should have to bow down. Prabhupada immediately said, this is your disease. You don't like to bow down, but you are forced to bow down by death. Now you're standing up. I don't like to bow down, but death will force you down. You'll have to fall down on the ground. And maybe, it depends what culture, and you may be put down under the ground. You have to. Nature will force you to bow down, birth, death, old age, and disease. If you don't accept Krishna and bow down before him, this form, then you'll have to meet Krishna in the form of death. Mrityu sarva harashchaham. Krishna comes in the form of death and takes everything away. Our youthful energy, that already is taken away by middle age. And then it just goes less, less, less. Our hopes, our aspirations, our money, our university degree are all finished. Our presidentship of the United States, whatever it may be, everything is finished. We are forced. There's no question. You can't say, now I don't like to die. You have to die. You're forced to. So Prabhupada said, this is sanity. This is sanity to understand that we are under the control of the laws of nature, we are under the control of God. Therefore, a sane person bows down to God. And an insane person who thinks, I am very great, he bows down another way, by force. That is not a very nice way to bow down. If we bow down before Krishna, voluntarily submitting ourselves to him, then Krishna is very pleased. That is a very pleasing relationship that is established. But if we are forced to bow down, defying the laws of nature, defiant to the last minute. There was one song by, this is a long time I heard, this one hymn had been put to, they changed the words to atheistic words. So he was making a prayer or preaching to the people, how you should not believe in God, how you should be an atheist. And he said, and when the hour comes, meaning the hour of death, don't turn away, face the light of day. In other words, keep your atheism till the last minute. Don't at the time of death think, oh, maybe there's a God, maybe I should pray to God. No, always remember, there's no God, we are all God. And then you find out at the time of death, actually it's not true. You have to suffer. But this defiant spirit, and what do you get for your defiance? You maintain your sense of stubborn independence, and stubbornly, independently, you suffer repeated birth, death, old age, and disease in 8,400,000 species of life. And you can be very stubborn and independent, and you will get what you want. You will get your so-called independence, but with the independence, so-called, comes repeated birth, death, old age, and disease. Prabhupada told that story about scissors, the stubborn scissors man. We have avid Prabhupada nectar readers over here. Maybe they're reading that story. How two men had an argument over the best way to cut a piece of paper, which isn't a very important subject. Anyway, they're having an argument over it. And one said we should cut it with a knife, and the other said with scissors. So it became quite a heated argument, and they started to beat each other. And the man who was a propagator of scissors philosophy, he was smaller and weaker than the propagator of knife philosophy. So he was running away, then he came to a river and thinking, well, I'd better jump in the river, otherwise this guy's going to beat me up. So he jumped in the river, but unfortunately the river was deeper than he thought and he wasn't a very good swimmer. So he started to go under, to drown. So just as he was drowning, his last fling, he put his hands above the water and went like this. So he's drowning, and he wants to say, yes, scissors, scissors, to the last. And what will he gain by going under the water? Going like this. But the same thing, atheists, they want to say, to the last moment, no, there is no God. Man, they had the idea that man is the ultimate pinnacle of nature by evolution. Man has come to this wonderful point. We have gone to the moon. We have created space rockets, computers. Man's intelligence has evolved to such a point that we have got such a wonderful society. Of course, it's mostly hype, because what is the actual benefit of all this? Modern society means no fresh air, no fresh water, no fresh food. Your brain is also completely unfresh, polluted, filled with all bad ideas. So what is the actual benefit? But they think man is the ultimate pinnacle of nature. We have evolved from cavemen, and now we are fantastically evolved so that we can fly around and drive around and turn on our TV and get 80 different channels. And such wonderful advancement. They're very proud that we've made so many inventions. But they don't think, where has the intelligence come from? If you're so intelligent, Prabhupada used to say, then why don't you make a brain like Mr. Einstein's brain? Or why did he die anyway? Why did he die? If he's such a great scientist, why didn't he keep himself alive, invent some chemical, he can drink it, and come back to life again, or not die at all? Why? Because he's under the control of the laws of nature. You may be a big, big scientist, but you're under the control of the laws of nature. You may get a computer, can link you up with anywhere in the world, and get all kinds of information at the flick of a button, but you're still under the laws of nature. Whatever you do, whatever fantastic drugs you arrange, you find out, you still have to die. Why is it they have so many medical departments in the universities all over the world? Why is it they're not investigating how to stop death? Why is no one doing that? They're trying to find out how to stop cancer, but why take it only as far as cancer? Why not find out how to stop death? Why not even find out what is the difference between a living body and a dead body? Why are they not even investigating? Practically, they're admitting that life is something that they have no knowledge about. Otherwise, why don't they investigate? If they're such great doctors and scientists, why don't they find out actually what happens at death and stop it? Why don't they stop the body aging? Now, they have some theories, oxidation of the body, therefore you should take vitamin E. But if you can take as much vitamin E as you like, you're still going to die. And it's not going to stop you dying. You might look a little younger for a few years, but inside your whole system rotting away, and eventually you die. So why don't they find out? Practically, that they are not investigating this is in a negative form an evidence that they know that life is something different from matter. If life is, as they say, without any evidence whatsoever, that life is simply a combination of matter, then why don't you adjust the chemicals in the body and keep it alive? So practically they're admitting in a negative way that life is not in their control. They're not the supreme. At least, even if you don't believe in God, you're so puffed up. Why don't you admit that you're not the controller? You're under the control of nature. If you can't see God, if you're so much blind, at least see this far, that there is nature. You're under the control of nature. You have to die. And they'll say, well, that's natural. That's right, it's natural. That means you're under the control of nature. It means you're not the controller. Just try to see. These very basic points, people find it's very difficult to convince people of, because they're so much mudha, foolish, though they think they're intelligent. But very basic points, that we have to die, therefore we are under the control of the laws of nature, therefore we are not the supreme controller. Therefore, to attempt to control nature, which is the whole attempt of modern civilization, that in itself is a complete misnomer, because you can't control nature. You can have a meteorological department which will study that now it's going to rain all month in England. You don't need a meteorological department to say that. We all know it rains all the time. But you can say that, but you can't stop the rain. Or just like it, they have earthquake prediction. So you can predict an earthquake is coming. You may be able to do that. Or a volcano is coming. Or a cyclone is coming. You don't have cyclones here. In Southeastern, you see, also America, sometimes they have these hurricanes. So you can say it's coming. But you can't stop it. Are you going to stop a hurricane? Where is your advancement of science that's going to stop a hurricane? Nothing you can do. For all your scientific advancement, so many houses and towns will be just simply blown away. And then with your scientific advancement, when it's all over, you can fly a plane over and have a TV report showing how everything is wiped out for miles around. But you didn't stop. You can't stop the wind. You can't stop the weather. You're not the controller. You can't stop death. So this is just what Krishna is saying, that he is the supreme controller. He is the supreme enjoyer. It's only sanity. It's not actually, from our point of view, we're thinking, oh, this is very high philosophy, Bhagavad Gita. But, high philosophy it is, but actually it's simply common sense that we are not the supreme, that there is a supreme person. That person, if you don't know who he is, we'll tell you, it's Krishna. It happens to be Krishna. You may say, well, how do I know it's Krishna? You don't know, so we'll tell you, Krishna. And that's accepted by all great acharyas. Those who do know, they all accept that God is Krishna. So very basic points, that there is a supreme control, there is a supreme enjoyer. We are not the supreme. This very simple point, because people's intelligence is so much perverted, that they're thinking, I am supreme. He sees someone, he can hardly get enough money to feed himself or pay his rent, and he's walking around the streets thinking, I am supreme. Due to this in-person Mayavad idea, people are thinking, they read some book. They read some book by some so-called Swami which says that you are supreme. And they think, well, that's what I always thought. It must be true. Oh, all right, I'm supreme. And the foolish person, he doesn't see. He's not supreme. You don't even know when you eat how it's being digested. And you're thinking you're supreme. You can't control it. You get a headache, you can't control it. Toothache, run to the dentist. And then how are you supreme? You can't even control, you have to run to the bathroom, and you're thinking you're the God, supreme controller. And you can't even control your passing stool in urine. This is madness, insanity. To think that we are supreme, this is madness. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what he is preaching, become humbler than a blade of grass. He's not recommending something for something which is very difficult or unnatural to us. What he is recommending is actually natural for us, because our natural position is that we are very small before God. And if we accept that position, then actually we become glorified, we become great, we become happy. All auspiciousness begins just by accepting the simple fact that I am not God, which is the most obvious thing actually, that I am the servant of God, or the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of God. That's even more pleasing to him. Actually, he doesn't even accept. If we think, I am the servant of God, Krishna says, sorry, I'm not accepting you. You have to become the servant of my servant of my servant, then he accepts. This is the system which Krishna has set up. Because Krishna wants to keep everything in the right place. Krishna is friendly to everyone. Suhridam sarva bhutana. But his friendship is not based on some sentiment. Be nice to everyone, smile at everyone. It's based on substance. This substantial, proper understanding. What is that understanding? That Krishna is the supreme and everyone is meant for serving him. And if everyone comes into that position, then the whole, everything works very nicely. But if someone rebels against that, you can't, I will be friendly with Krishna, but I'm also as good as Krishna. Krishna, no, not allowed. You want to think like that? You go to the material world. There you can pretend, I am God, in different species of life, play out some drama. I am the best dog, I am the best cat, I am the best human being. Krishna has made such a system. He is God. Actually, you can become more than God in one sense. Krishna will allow you to. If we become so much surrendered to God, so much in love with Him, that just like Mother Yashoda. She's thinking, Krishna is my child, and she's punishing him. No one can punish him. No one can punish God. The atheists, they would like to, but they cannot. He is punishing them. But Krishna accepts that Yashoda is so much considering me as her beloved son, that out of anger she is punishing me. What is that anger? That my boy Krishna, if I don't punish him, he'll grow up to be a bad boy. So I have to punish him. That would be good for him. So much in this motherly mood. So that way, a devotee can become more than God. That is very, very, very high level. He's not on that level. He shouldn't artificially try to jump to that level. Our position is that we are servant. We have to understand this basic point. How God is great. The Prabhupada always used to say, everyone will say God is great. But who is God and how He is great? That we should understand. That is being described in Bhagavad Gita. That is more elaborately described in Srimad Bhagavatam. These wonderful transcendental literatures have been translated by Srila Prabhupada in English in very simple, straightforward language. We can all understand the simple, straightforward fact that we need to hear again and again and again that we are not God. We are the servant of God. We are the servant of the servant of the servant of God. Who is God? Krishna is God. What does it mean by God? Supreme personality of Godhead. Personality of Krishna is a person. He's not just some idea or a cloud or a sky or formless, shapeless, odorless, colorless, tasteless, inanimate idea. He's a person. Means, just like we have likes and dislikes, he also has likes and dislikes. Of course, he's not petty like us. His likes and dislikes are on the level of God. He has likes and dislikes. He has feelings, emotions, all these things. Therefore, our happy position is in relationship with him, serving him. That is our proper position. Then we also become happy. And if we don't, then simply we have to suffer life after life after life. It's a very simple thing to understand. But because we are diseased, contaminated, life after life, thinking, I am always trying to be the best. I will be the best dog. I will be the best cat. I will be the best. I'll be the best on my street. This mentality. Because of this, we are forgetting our position of service to Krishna. So Krishna is reminding us again and again and again throughout the Gita, I am supreme, you are not supreme. Krishna is not saying, just like someone like a bully who is trying to push you down. But as a friend, he is supreme. Therefore, if he says, he is telling us for our benefit, that he says to Krishna, Vakshami itakam yaya, I'm speaking for your benefit. Krishna is so much superior to us, he doesn't have to say it to us to lay a trip on us, something like this. He is so much superior to us, there's no question of rivalry with him. There's no question of competing with him. No one can compete with him. But if we simply realize that he is superior, he is supreme in all respects, and I'm his servant, and therefore take up the humble mode of service, then we become benefited. Otherwise, Krishna, for his sake, he doesn't need our service. He's already being served by Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambrahma Sivyamana, unlimited goddesses of fortune are serving Krishna with great honor and reverence in the spiritual world. But for our benefit, he is telling us, don't think you're supreme, you're not supreme. You are the servant, you are my servant. Serve me, be happy. This Krishna is teaching us. Any question, please? I almost always do. Yeah. People don't usually like me for it. But it's just like if someone's walking off the edge of a cliff, say he's flying a kite, and you say to him, you're going to go off the edge of a cliff, and he says, don't disturb me, I'm flying my kite. It's your duty to tell him. They may not follow. A good way to tell them, of course, is to give Prabhupada's books, especially Bhagavad Gita as it is. If anyone reads that, then that will bomb out all so many, all the bogus ideas. Everything's very straightforward and clear if anyone reads that. Of course, a lot of people in this country who are votaries of bogus gods are all the people who are set in their ways, and it may be difficult to change, especially if they're considering you're younger, it may be very difficult to change them. It might be better to try to bend the younger bamboo, work with the younger people. All the generation, there's so many, it may be difficult. Still, I find it actually quite repugnant. I can't tolerate actually when someone's saying that so-and-so is God when they're not God. It's an insult to Krishna. It's the most horrible thing. Someone is calling himself God. And what is his qualification? He has a little mystic power which he got from Krishna. And he's using that to cheat people, calling himself. For someone to call himself God. It's like that story of the jackal. You know that story from the Hitopadesh? Jackal fell in the villages they'll have a big pot of different colored dyes, the dyeing cloth. So a jackal fell in a pot of blue dye accidentally. And when he came back to the village, to the jungle, he saw everyone is sitting, oh, what's this? And you're a wonderful animal. And even the lion was afraid. What is this animal? Blue, magnificent blue color. So they all crowned him as the king of the jungle. He thought, wow, this is great. They're all serving me. And one night, he heard in the distance all the jackals are calling out, just like the dogs call out at night. So being a jackal, he couldn't restrain himself. Then they all know, oh, he's a jackal. So then the lion killed him. They understood. He appeared to be something different. Actually, he was only a jackal. So like these imitation incarnations of God, why do they say that? Because they want name, fame, glory, followers. And many of them, they may actually think they're God, because that's the power of illusion. They may actually think they're God. And their followers may think that also, but they're grossly, grossly misled. According to the Isha Upanishad, such people, they enter into the darkest regions of hell along with their followers. So people may not like it if we tell them that actually you're completely mistaken, this is completely bogus and it's offensive. But I feel it's our duty to say something, because otherwise what chance they have? It's very, very sinful to accept someone who's not God as God and worship him. And the result is that you're going to get extremely bad karma, it's very offensive. So at least we should try to tell them. If they don't accept it, which in many cases they won't, that's their misfortune, but at least we should try to do something to help them. It's difficult. Hinduism is a big big soup, big khichdi, all different ideas which are just dreamed up, and there's new ones coming up every day. That's why we need to distribute this Bhagavad Gita as it is, very important, and get people to read it. At least among your own community, if you can do that. You're coming, it's great, wonderful. You should try and do something with your own community, because it's very confused. Bhagavad Ananda was just telling me they made a new Jalaram temple in Leicester, in which Lakshmi Narayan are there like the doorkeepers, and the main, just at the entrance, and then the main temple is Jalaram, this upcoming incarnation of God. Hottest tip for new incarnation. So, but you'll find even in all their temples, they'll have Lakshmi Narayan, Radha Krishna on the side, and Sahajanand Swami in the center. He himself didn't say. He said, I'm worshipping Radha Krishna. But it's actually envy of Krishna that they can put anyone above him. And it's actually offensive. They may say, we're Vaishnavas, but this is not Vaishnavism, to put anyone above Radha and Krishna. It's sinful. It's not Vaishnavism. It's offensive. So it's a difficult job. People are very confused and mixed up because they don't know what God means. They say, God, any person come along and say he's God, and someone will accept it. Therefore, these books, distributing them, which gives knowledge clearly, what is the meaning of God, who is qualified to be understood as God. It's very important we distribute these books. You going to say something?
Ask a question based on just following on from the Swami narrative. If
thing with the Swaminarayans is that even though Siddhananda Swami, as you know, pointed out, you know, there's no documented evidence that he said he's God. And you know, in the Shikshapatra, he talks about worshipping Lakshmi Narayan,
yeah,
and reading Bhagavatam. Still, his followers stipulate that the miracles, he performed miracles while he was around, you know, from Chapaya to, you know, during his pilgrimage. And because they cite those miracles as evidence, A, they cite those miracles as evidence that therefore he's God. B, they say that he was able in many, many occasions to put certain people under trance so they could see their favorite deity in their mind. And C, the other reason is that actually when Krishna says yada yada he came as yada, that's actually proof that Siddhananda Swami is one of the incarnations. And, you know, like when we are
that's a very weak point. Just like there's a Bangladesh, I was many years in Bangladesh, that's like a breeding ground for false incarnations. it's like they breed like mosquitoes. So there was one actually very intelligent man who was formerly the permanent financial advisor to the government of Pakistan before East Pakistan became Bangladesh. So a very intelligent person materially. But he was from the same area as this bogus incarnation. So I asked him, well, what's the evidence in Shastra? Every incarnation, he should be predicted by Shastra. He said, so he thought about it, and he said, well, his name's in the Vishnu Sahasranam. His name is Jagat Bandhu. So, well, that's the case. Well, in India, there's so many Govindas and Narayanas, and they're all incarnations of God, according to... So then Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya. Krishna, he comes in every age, and therefore, Swami Narayan is in Kali Yuga, therefore that proves he's God. And what kind of evidence is that? And anyone could be said to be. But actually, now one point about miracles, he's not the only one who's done miracles. There are people even today who are, there's so many people doing miracles. But that in itself is not evidence of one being God. What is the definition of God? Aishvaryasya, samagrasya, viryasya, yashasya, shriya, gyanava, yagya, yoschava, shandang, bhagatinguna. Bhagavan means one who is full with all opulences, all strength, all wealth, all fame, all knowledge, all beauty, all renunciation. He owns everything in the universe. Yatova imani bhutani jayanti. There's so many shastra. Yatova imani bhutani jayanti, yena jatani jivanti, yat prayanti abhisangvishanti. Tad vijyagyasas va tad brahmeti. The absolute truth is that from which everything emanates, who is the support of everything, the whole millions of universes are supported by him. All the living entities are supported by him. At the time of dissolution, everything enters into him. It's no small thing to be God.
But that's what they say the God, Swami Narayan, does.
Yeah, but then what is the evidence?
No evidence.
Whereas, just like in Gita, Krishna, Arjuna accepts Krishna, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, then who says Asita, Devala Vyas, Narada, so many rishis they accept. And who accepts, you see, 12 Mahajans, Swayambhu, Brahma, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapilo, Manu, Pralada, Janako, Bhishma, Bali, Vyasaki, Sugadev Goswami, Yamaraj, they all accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And a few people in Gujarat, not even all the Gujaratis, they accept Sahajanand Swami as God. So, and he said to read Bhagavatam, and Bhagavatam says that in Kali Yuga, the incarnation will yagyai sankirtana prayaya janti hi sumedasa. He will spread sankirtan. So Sahajanand Swami, he was a devotee, no doubt, but he didn't spread sankirtan. So how is he the incarnation for the age? And why him? There's so many people claiming to be God just out of some party spirit because you're born in a Gujarati family. You think, well, maybe because there are people all around you are saying he's God, he's God, he's God. But where is the actual evidence? Like I say, there's about 320 incarnations at the present time. They can all say the same thing: yada yada hi dharmasya. Our guru shows some miracles. Sai Baba's an incarnation because he produces some ashes. This is not the evidence of being God. Nowhere in scripture does it say that the symptom of being God is that ashes comes out of your picture. That's just some... he's manipulating ghosts, actually. As done by Bhuts. He also is in the same... same kind of consciousness. Not saintly, not godly consciousness, not at all. So these things should be understood very clearly. India is so much misled, mixed up. Don't out of sentiment accept, well, my mother, my father, my uncle, my grandfather, they all follow, so I should also follow. Try. That Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, he is appealing to our intelligence. He's given us intelligence. Now we should try to use that. Not that actually God cannot be understood simply by intelligence. Not simply by intelligence, but if we accepting basic principles that I'm not God, I'm subordinate to God. God can be understood through Shastra, through Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. Applying our intelligence along these guidelines, then we can understand. It's actually not a very difficult thing to understand. This we say, we're going in the villages in Gujarat, and they've come in, Swami Narayan preaching, and put a picture of Pramukh Swami, and Swami Narayan said, but who are your forefathers worshipping? Krishna. So what's, even if you say Swami Narayan is an incarnation of Krishna, where's Krishna? Why have you thrown out Krishna? This is evidence that they're envious of Krishna. This is a symptom of a demon, is they don't like to see Krishna worshipped. And they'll bring some competitor for Krishna. This is the most envious thing, to take Jiva, an ordinary living being, as good as God, as good as Krishna. It's the most envious thing. So they supposed to be Vaishnavas, but actually it's most insidious, because externally it may appear to be almost like Vaishnavism, but actually it's the antithesis of Vaishnavism. Accepting an ordinary person. Ordinary person means Jiva, as good as God, as being God. You won't find anywhere in the Vedic scriptures any reference to Sahajananda Swami. Nowhere, nothing.
That covers incarnations and people like that. But how do we deal with? How are we meant to deal with the increasingly large body of scholastic thought that Bhagavad Gita was not compiled by Bhagavad Gita? And I remember being at university and picking up other kinds of Bhagavad Gita and various stories, and people saying that actually, maybe they're karmis, maybe they're new teachers, whatever, but they say that we have such and such evidence that actually Gita was compiled.
What evidence? What evidence?
Carbon dating, whatever.
But that carbon dating, they're always changing that also. They say, well, the carbon dating, 20 years ago, they were saying by carbon dating, we dated it at this. And now they say, well, now our carbon dating, we've got a much more accurate system, and the old carbon dating was wrong. But it's like that in all of us. They're always changing. But what are you going to do by carbon dating? Anyway, what is proved by carbon dating? What are you going to prove? Because it was handed down by oral tradition. According to the literature itself, according to Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam, and all the Vedic literatures, This Vedic literature was compiled by Vyasa, who was contemporary of Krishna, at the beginning of Kali Yuga, which was approximately 5,000 years ago. We accept Vyasa, we don't accept your meat-eating karmi, who's envious of Krishna, and whose so-called knowledge changes all the time anyway. They always have, even to be a scholar, you have to have a different theory to another scholar, otherwise you can't hold your position. They have all different theories about everything. But basically, this idea came up because that's documented very nicely by Satsarupa Maharaj in his book, Readings in Vedic Literature, that the whole field of Indology was developed by Western scholars with the aim of showing that Indian culture is inferior to Christianity. That was the whole aim of that was the whole reason why they studied Sanskrit and translated the books and said so many things and did so many things. That was developed. The whole field of Indology was developed in an era where, who was that? One of the first scholars said that the average Hindu is the savage with an intelligence no greater than a dog. That was their whole outlook, and they wanted to prove that. Although they had a problem coming coming to India, when they saw it, actually it's such a developed culture, such developed philosophy. Even according to anthropologists, you can judge how developed a culture is, how developed a civilization is by its language. What is the complexity of its language? And there's no comparison in the world to the complexity and the profundity and the depth of Sanskrit. There's absolutely no comparison. Sanskrit means completely done. It's perfectly done. There's no comparison. So it goes against all their theories that of Western superiority, Christian superiority, or if you take the evolutionary theory that man has evolved from monkeys and we're now more civilized. But then they had such civilization that is evident from the Sanskrit language and literature. In the Sanskrit literature, you'll find words like Viman, airplane, long before the Wright brothers. You have Paramanu, describing about the atom, calculation of time from the movement, from the smallest calculation. This is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto. Calculation of time, there are different gradations. From the smallest gradation of time is the time it takes one atom to move over another, which shows they have knowledge of the atom. And then the largest measurement of time is the universal time, the time of the existence of the universe. Dviparardha, the time of existence of the universe, which we have information is, how long is that? 4,320,000 years is one yuga cycle. Then 1,000 of these ages taken together, that is one day of Brahma, and his night is the same length. And 30 days of composed of 4,320,000 times 1,000 times 2. 30 days make 1 month, 12 months make a year, and he lives 100 such years. So Brahma's lifespan, or the lifespan of the universe, is 4,320,000 times 1,000 times 2 times 30 times 12 times 100. So this... and. This kind of calculations of time span, and they're giving history the last 3,000 years. And we're giving history, why 5,000 years ago? Krishna says in the Gita, Imam Nivasvate Yogam Prokta Vahana Avyayam. I spoke this to the sun god, and Prabhupada has given some calculation. This was about 130 million years ago. And their whole concept of time, that God created the universe at one point only, and that every human being only is a new soul that comes into existence, and then most of them get thrown into hell forever because they don't wash themselves in the blood of Christ. And then that's it. And there's only one creation, and few people get born. Most of them get thrown to hell forever, to burn in hell forever by the all-merciful God. And that's it. It's a very limited concept. Actually, philosophically, they're full of holes. If God is all-merciful, then why does he give us only one chance? And if you blow it, if, say you're born in a Hindu, staunch Hindu family, and you're not inclined towards Christianity, then as a result of your upbringing, which God put you in such a family, then you have to burn in hell forever, according to their idea. So even an ordinary father will give his son, however bad he is, he'll give him another chance. That's, we understand, reincarnation, you get another chance. However bad you may be, but according to them, you're finished forever. If you don't accept Jesus, and you may be born in a village in Thailand where no one ever heard of Jesus, and that's a bit hard luck. God, out of his mercy on you, had you born in such a place where you never hear of Jesus, and you didn't wash yourself in the blood of Christ, and you didn't eat beef on Sundays, and you go to hell forever. And not being a good Christian. I mean, it's philosophically empty. It doesn't make any sense. Even. Anyway, they have their authorities. They accept some, as you say, meat-eating scholar. And we accept Vyasadeva, Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who are not only consummate Vedic scholars, but they are getting, you can see, they're getting the result of Vedic learning. Vedic learning is not meant to be simply for academics, but it's meant to bring one to the point of God realization. So those who study the Vedas in such a way, they get the result that they become God realized. We want to be like that. We don't want to be like the meat-eating materialist who simply studies the Vedas so he has a job at the university. We're not interested in that. So we'll accept, okay, that's your authority. You follow that authority, we'll follow Vyasadeva. We'll follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We'll get the result of studying the Vedas, and you can have big conferences and talk whatever you like. The Vedas are 3,000 years. Actually, what does it matter if it was 3,000 in one sense, whether it's 3,000 years or 5,000 years? Why don't you follow it and become purified and understand who is God? That's the whole purpose of the Vedas.
There are two gurus in Krishna consciousness. Are they all capable of seeing Krishna's animated form?
Krishna's animated form? What does that mean? I mean, can they see Krishna face to face? Can all of them see Krishna face to face? I don't know. I never asked all of them. Krishna can be seen by all devotees, not only gurus. The aim of Krishna consciousness is to... Of course, actually, the aim of Krishna consciousness is not to... actually to see Krishna, but to act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased to see us. So that seeing comes first, how? Shastra Chakshu. We should see through the eye of Shastra. Actually, everyone can see Krishna, because Krishna is everywhere. But we don't see because we are covered by the curtain of Maya. Therefore, we have to hear, then we can understand Krishna. Just like you may see, sometimes Prabhupada was asked, can you see God? And you say, yes, you can see also. Here he is, deity. Here is Krishna. But the materialistic person sees a piece of wood or a piece of stone. The devotee who has been trained in Shastra understands that this is Krishna. This is not simply stone. This is Krishna. And those who are fully advanced in Krishna consciousness, they, not only through Shastra, but they talk with Krishna. It's so much advanced. So that level we're aspiring for. Once Prabhupada was asked, can you see God? Can you talk with Him? And Prabhupada said, he was asked by a newspaper reporter, so he said that, even if I can, what would you know of it? If I tell you yes, would you, are you ready to accept what I say? So he said, yes, all right, I accept what you say. So Prabhupada said, yes, I'm talking with God at every moment. So that stage, kobe hobe valo shedi nama, amarapara laguchi, shuddhaname ruchi, kripa bali hobe, hidaye shanchar. When we become free from offenses, then by chanting Hare Krishna, everything, the whole spiritual world will be manifested to us, if Krishna so desires. Because we are not the controllers of Krishna, we are servants of Krishna. So when Krishna wants to reveal Himself to us, certainly He will reveal Himself to us. Any other question? Make a last question. No? All right, then we'll finish. Hare Krishna.
Thanks.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.